Sal Capaccio.
Sal's everywhere. Well, Sal's at minicamp. Sal's at your golf. Yeah, I saw Sal. I saw him at T-ball.
Wait a minute. The thing you were at for why you couldn't golf, yep. Sal was at, but he also golfed?
Apparently. No one's able to do more things at one time than Sal. He's the man of all trades.
He might just own a helicopter and we don't know it.
Get to the chopper!
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
The Capaccio copter is touched down in Chicago ahead of Bills and Bears and a joint practice between the Bills and Bears, and then a preseason game, preseason game number 2 out of 3 for the Bills. So joining us live from Chicago on the Western Hotline is Mr. Sal Capaccio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jeremy. If I may, just want to start today by condolences to Art Wander's family, people who knew Art Wander, the entire, you know, region and community in radio and entertainment. What an amazing, amazing man. I know you know he passed away yesterday. Mm-hmm. I read about it thanks to our friend Bob Kaczynski, who posted about it. And Art Wander was a man who did what, you know, was a talk show host. And literally the reason I do this for a living. Like, Art Wander was the reason I got into this business to do this. In high school, when we'd be in the car, I would say I was an old soul. I was in high school listening to talk radio at the time. That wasn't cool at the time, right?
Yeah.
But I did that. And if my dad went to the store, I wanted to sit in the car and I wanted to listen. And I would call him. I would call his show. And you should do this on your show, Jeremy. What he did was he had everybody had nicknames. And every day, the first person who called in, the guy, he's called himself Mr. T. Let's go to Mr. T. And then there was a guy named the Polish Prince. And there was a guy named Ace. And there was all these different names. And I'm like, man, I need a nickname. It was kind of corny and cool. I was, yeah, you know, young, and I went to Cleveland Hill. So I said, oh, you know what? We're the Golden Eagles. I was the Golden Eagle when I would call. Like, that was my nickname when I'd call the talk show at like 16 years old, and I'd record myself and listen back. Anyway, one time I called him and I said, you know, can I talk to you about something off the air? And he said, sure. So I called the same number and he picked it right up right after the show. He goes, hey, Golden Eagle, what's going on? I'm like, oh, hey, Art. I said, listen, I want to do what you do for a living and I want to go to Syracuse University. Would it be okay? Could you write me a letter of recommendation? Absolutely. And I went down to Franklin Street where the old studios was many years ago, and he did that for me. And it was a tough day to learn yesterday, but I know he lived an amazing, amazing, yeah, life. And I know a lot of people who I heard from yesterday who said that, you know, they listened to Art growing up, and just wanted to pass that along because he meant so much to me and my life and my career.
Yeah, we had Howard on earlier, Sal. Talked to Howard about it. Howard has a piece up at our website, WGR550.com, just like remembering Art. And it's funny, Howard said that, like, getting to know Art Wander over the years, he didn't think he would like him at first because he thought he was too bombastic and he's on the radio. And then he got to know him, like, oh, he's a really nice guy, which is, you know, not an unusual kind of thing. You know, when you were listening to Art way back then,
yeah,
was he bombastic? Was he, you know, I'm not saying like a hot take artist, but, you know, when you're someone back then, you had to be remembered. Like, what do you remember his style to be like?
Yeah, he was an entertainer. I would say bombastic is an interesting word. I don't know. He wasn't hot takey. He was an entertainer. He would be critical and he would go after people, and there were people that he absolutely loved and he would really defend all the time. He was kind of a little bit of, you know, kind of polarizing that way, but it was never in a way that I think that, you know, we've had other people on the radio here where, oh man, this person's just like really going after it one way or the other. You know, Art had his favorites and there was times where he went after people. And I believe it was him that Bill Polian was referencing. Did Howard talk about it when he said, when Bill Polian, yeah, went on a press conference one time and he said, and if you don't like it, get out of town or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was Art. He was referencing because Art had kind of criticized, you know, something the Bills had done. So yeah, he was an entertainer. And that's why, I mean, you have to be an entertainer when you come up with the name Tiny Tot of the Kilowatt or Artie Baby Boo Boo, right? I mean, that's who he was. So yeah, in an era where, you know, you kind of had to really, I mean, it was all about calls, right? It was taking calls. This guy was the master at taking calls and engaging with people.
Well, the Golden Eagle is on the Westher Hotline right now talking to us from Chicago. All right, so yes. I saw you got to see the Bean at, is it Millennium Park? Millennium Park? What is that?
I believe that is Millennium Park.
Yeah, the Bean. And I've seen
far away here.
I've seen the Bean. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before. And then people started telling me there's a conspiracy theory that there's a man in the bean. And I'm like, what? Like, right. I literally, like, there's literally protesters out there doing this. And I started going down the rabbit hole last night, and I definitely should not have done that. I just want you to know.
Right.
So this is not too far away from the hotel where we're staying. And I went out last night to just walk around, wanted to get a little bite to eat. And then I said, boy, I wonder where the bean is. And sure enough, it was right there, Millennial Park, one or the other. And I walked over there, and yeah, a lot of people. It was pretty busy there, but, you know, everybody's taking pictures and experiencing it. So Chicago's a really cool city. It's a very I always say it's a great summer city. Like, Chicago kind of comes alive in the summer with the bridges and the boats and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's different parts of Chicago where you can always be and stay. I always say it's different than like New York or Boston. To me, New York and Boston are very, very walkable through the whole city, even though, like, yeah, you're not going to like walk from every side of Manhattan to the other, but you can, you know, that's not Chicago. You kind of have to pick and choose where you want to be. But once you're there, it has very distinct features all over.
So joint practice today with the Bears and then a game at the Bears Stadium, Soldier Field. Like, checking in on the Bears, Sal, where is the practice? Is it at their facility? Is it at their stadium? Where are things going to happen? Because I'd imagine we'll see some highlights today on these joint practices. I was kind of joking earlier on, they're like, these are the new training camp highlights that we're getting. We got a lot of Dolphins Lions, Dolphins Bears. Where will this all be taking place today?
Yeah, good question. It is not at Soldier Field. It is at Halas Hall. Halas Hall is located in, I believe, Forest Hills. I have to take a look exactly. Lake Forest, I believe, is actually where it is. So I don't know in relation exactly where that is to Soldier Field, but it is a practice facility where the Bears hold their practices. And yes, we're going to have, there's no fans. This is a closed practice to fans, but it is open to media, obviously. So, you know, I'll be there. Other media will be on hand, both Chicago and Buffalo. And you're going to obviously get different perspectives. That's part of the cool thing that I like about these things is whether it's the Bills or someone else. Last week, the Bears had a joint practice against the Miami Dolphins, and you read the reports from the Dolphins people and from the Bears people. And, you know, same thing here. So Bills fans can obviously, we want you to read our coverage and listen and all that, but you'll get perspective from Buffalo media. You'll get perspective from Chicago media. And I think that's cool. Like, what you're seeing matches up because you're kind of seeing it from a different lens right there. And then, you know, as we talked about before, you really don't know exactly what you're going to get, except I could probably tell you're going to get, you know, one-on-ones with offensive line and defensive line or receivers against DBs. You know, how much 7-on-7 they do, how much 11-on-11. They're not going to, usually you're not taking guys totally to the ground, even in this setting, you're doing up thud, but you could have that because, you know, you're trying to prepare for the season. It's about getting your work done. It's about being efficient. And, you know, that's what today's goal is.
Sell some transactions for the Bills ahead of this practice. The wide receiver Jalen Virgil and defensive end Justin Hollins were waived. And the Bills added tight end Matt Sokol. He's back with the team. He was with them before. And also a defensive end in Nelson Ceasar. So a couple, you know, end of the roster moves. But Virgil, is he the most surprising piece here? I mean, he played last year. He's on the roster last year. And to have him waived, injured, would probably be good news for Tyrell Shavers?
I would say that's probably right, or everybody else who can elevate. But I think, sure, Shavers is one of those guys right there that we've talked about a lot. But I agree with you, going back to what you said about Virgil, that, you know, a little surprising. I didn't realize, he had an injury that would cause him to be released. I know that he was dealing with something the other day out of practice. I don't know if he had a full practice, but I think he had missed the one practice. But that said, I thought he was having a good camp, Jeremy. Like, it was always a guy who was a little bit under the radar that I would bring up once in a while, that, you know, Virgil's kind of popping a little bit here. Still, to me, a long shot to make the roster. Like, I didn't think he was going to make it, but you're right. They had him on the practice squad last year, and then they elevated him, and then they signed him. Remember, because they elevated him like a couple times, they signed him. So he actually did play a role on the Bills' offense last year and on special teams. You know, I offense, he had a few snaps, but he played on special teams, but he was on the active roster. So what does that do at wide receiver? It is interesting that when they go and sign somebody, they sign Matt Sokol, who had been released last week, I think a couple days ago. So that was more of a – it sounds like a paper transaction. They had to have numbers. But in this case – they don't bring in another wide receiver. So now you're down Jalen Virgil, you know, what do you still have? Of course, beyond Shakir, Coleman, Palmer, and then it's Samuel, Elijah Moore, Tyrell Shavers, Laviska Shenault, and KJ Hambler. I mean, Christian Wilkerson is still on this roster, and Caden Prather is now playing. So you still have a lot of competition for the back end of the wide receiver spot, and I'm interested to see who practices today. That's going to be an interesting storyline. Is Curtis Samuel out there? Elijah Moore, who didn't practice the other day? You know, are these guys, Tyrell Shavers didn't practice the other day. Is he going to today? So today could be a big day to kind of get a little bit more of a read and separation on what the Bills feel.
Sal Capaccio from Chicago. We might get an indication of how they lay out the preseason game on Sunday. Would you anticipate, let's start, Sal, with quarterback, that they flipped their order? They played well enough to have a real competition here? Because it's Trubisky's old team. I don't know how that factors in, but I feel like if Trubisky goes first, then Mitch Trubisky is the backup quarterback. But I could be wrong there. How do you think they handle it?
I mean, I wouldn't rule out Josh Allen playing, to be honest with you. Okay. I don't know that. Maybe not, right? We don't know. I think today could determine that too, Jeremy, which is what if he has a really good day today, gets everything done, they want to get done. They say, you know what, Josh, you're good. Back off. I know Bills fans generally don't love to hear that Josh Allen could play in a preseason game, but I want to remind everybody, last year, the Bills went to Pittsburgh. They had a joint practice against the Steelers. Josh, you know, was a big part of that. And then he was going to play against the Steelers. The only reason he didn't was because there was like a really bad rain that came before the game and the field got wet. So Josh did not play because they didn't want to risk him on the field. I wonder if it's the same playbook this time, which is, okay, he's going to play in this and he's going to play Sunday night. We know the Bears are playing their starters Sunday night. Is that a reason to yes or is that a reason to no if you're Sean McDermott, which is defensive starters. You want to see how your starting offense can acclimate, you know, against a starting defense, which by all accounts has had really good camp and has played pretty well in last week's, you know, scrimmage or joint practice against the Dolphins. So that being said, let's just say it's not Josh. I agree with you. I think that it would probably seem right that Mike White would get the first role this time. Maybe Mike White even gets in pretty quickly if Josh Allen, you know, starts and comes out of the game, maybe a couple series. It would feel like that's the case. If it's not, if they give it to Trubisky right away, then to me, I'm interpreting that as there's a pretty good gap here between Trubisky and White. If White gets it first, I think that I'm going to interpret it as there's a pretty good competition still going on, and they're seeing these guys pretty evenly.
I'm thinking all the way back to, boy, Sal, it must be a previous coaching staff with a joint practice. Do they view the joint practice as a start? Like whoever gets more reps in that spot? Because it could be Josh, of course, getting a good amount of reps, and then there's only going to be a certain amount in the joint practice that could go for Mike White there because that's a controlled environment. I don't know. I guess it'll be interesting because these joint practices followed by games are, you know, a little bit different, and the coaches would have different value in the one set of reps versus the other.
I agree. I mean, look, I don't know, and it's a great question. I think every coach is going to feel differently, right?
Yeah.
You're going to sit down. You're going to map it out with your coaching staff. You're going to map it out with your organization and say, like, how much we get done today, does that impact what we want to get on Sunday? Or do you already have it set and say, no, we want the game reps. That's valuable. I know Sean McDermott values those, the game reps for his guys. Like he has over the years said that those preseason games, getting some of that under your belt is very valuable. That's interesting. The other part I find interesting going to the Chicago side of this, Jeremy, is like here's Ben Johnson who takes over this team. He's a brand new coach. He's installing a brand new offense. Caleb Williams, who had some struggles last year, he's a second year in the system. And they have gone like diving headfirst into joint practice last week, joint practice this week. Like they're just throwing it all on the table now. I would think in my head that a coach like that in that situation would say, we got to get all of our stuff done. We're not ready for that. Sean McDermott didn't do that. His first 2 years in Buffalo, he didn't want to do any joint practices. Josh Allen comes along, didn't want to do that. Took until his third year to say, okay, we'll do that. And that had to be with a team in Carolina that they really trusted in Ron Rivera, right? So it's really interesting how I think Ben Johnson is approaching his first year as head coach of the Bears and going right at it and saying, you know what? We just got out of camp for 2 weeks and we're going right to joint practices.
Yeah. Injuries that we're monitoring to see who is not available for today?
We are monitoring Deion Dawkins. We don't know if he's available. We don't know if he's not available. So we'll see. Remember, Deion, Sean McDermott said that he had a back flare-up, which is why he missed practice the other day. So we'll see if Deion Dawkins is out on the practice field today. Do not expect, obviously, even though you saw Khalil Shakir was in the longer in the walking boot, he's not going to be out there. He's still a little ways away. Alec Anderson had started practicing a little bit. I don't know if this is a little bit too soon. He had done some individual work. He hadn't done some teamwork. And then I want to see and make sure that Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp got through practice okay, right? I mean, that's always something. His first practice back the other day. Did they get through okay? If they did, this is big. They get them on the field together. Like, I think maybe more than anybody, those two guys today is a really big day for them because they need this work to be together for the communication piece. And I want to see and make sure those guys are able to it. I would say, you know, no Tyler Bass probably hasn't kicked in a while. And who's the other one? And then again, like I said, Curtis Samuel's a guy I think that we'll be watching for.
You know, on the safety cell, do you think it's interesting because I know when McDermott was asked about how much they game plan for a preseason game, it was between 0 and 1 for the Giants. So here's the Bears. Do you think it's possible if Bishop and Rapp are both good to go and able to play, that they would get a healthy dose of snaps because the Bills think it is really the pairing? Like, they need time on task together, and, you know, injuries, schminjuries, like, you've been banged up as it is. Why protect you? What I need are the reps. And they could play a significant amount of snaps, not only today at practice, but also in the game.
I think it's possible, for sure. I just judging by the way Sean McDermott talks about that and what he values, I think it's very possible that you see those guys on the field quite a bit. There's got to be that balance, though, right? Which is what you said. You know, how much do you want to put on them just coming back from injury? You're, you know, 3 weeks away from your first game versus the fact that you absolutely need to have them start taking some reps together. So no doubt about that. I don't expect, again, the Bills to game plan for this game like they didn't last week, but I do think you have to make sure these guys are buttoned up on their communication. One of the things that I'm interested in seeing, Jeremy, related to this is, and this is a really good test for the Bills defense to go against a Ben Johnson offense, right? I mean, you get two days. So you get a full practice in and you get a full game of a Ben Johnson offense, a guy who is known as one of the best play callers, one of the best innovators of offensive football in the NFL. Like, that, I think that's a really good test. So yeah, put those guys out there, get their time on task because you got to start buttoning that up.
Sal Capaccio from Chicago ahead of Bills Bears, preseason game number 2, and of course the joint practice. Is there anything we did not cover we should get to here regarding this game? Like, the Ben Johnson point is good. You know, seeing how they go up against his offense, and he's been interesting to watch. Like, he's a guy that is thought of as a, you know, mad scientist in the lab, but I feel like a lot of what I've read about Chicago has been about his culture and how he's working them really hard, demanding a lot of them, and being very honest with players. Like, it'll be interesting to see how that goes, and the Bills, of course, get a look at it. So, eager to see.
No, I think the only other thing is, you know, obviously, we talked many times about the fact that, like, these things can get out of hand a little bit if it goes the wrong way, right? Like, you have to make sure that you're abiding by how you're trying to get this practice done efficiently, and they can get chirpy, they can get chippy. Josh Allen said that they can get chippy. So this is on the coaches and this is on the players themselves, the police themselves. But you always go to these things hoping that, you know, those sorts of things don't start happening. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a skirmish here or there. I think there was one or two little ones in Pittsburgh last year, but nothing that rose to, it's like training camp, right? Nothing that rose to the level of, oh my God, this is happening all over. Now, I think you might have had a few fights in these joint practices with other teams this year. But I also haven't seen, like, viral videos of full team-on-team fights like we used to, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah. All right. Practice today from Chicago. Sal, I learned that the bean is actually called Cloud Gate.
Me too. I learned that yesterday. I did not know that until I went down that rabbit hole that I told you about. Yeah. But, Cloud Gate. I had no idea, but it's called the bean because it's shaped like...
Looks like a bean, yeah. Looks like a giant bean. Yeah. All right, Sal, thanks very much.
All right, you got it.
Sal Capaccio, live from Chicago, home of the bean. I read the conspiracy of Cloudgate, all that. It's definitely a cool thing to see, and it looks like a bean. If you're the artist that made it and called it Cloudgate, are you mad that people just call it the bean? You probably are, right? You want it to be called the thing you named it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that giant bean thing. All right, it's called CloudGate. 803-0550. Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Sports on the other side. Your phone calls as well. Should Allen play? Backup quarterbacks, you know, how you want to handle this? Bills and Bears have a practice today, and then a preseason game on Sunday, late Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Jeremy and Joe off today here on WGR.
James was not really a starter at Georgia. He was more in that sub-back role, and so he wasn't a guy that sometimes you draft guys out of college and they, you know, a 2-3 year workhorse. He was not, and his first year here he didn't. Even last year he's been around that 50% number. We like what he provides. We do see him as a three-down type player, and we think he could take more, but we also want to use our other weapons and keep him as fresh as possible. We think that's the best utilization of him, and I know he gets put in the running back room or guys get put in a tight end room, but it's just trying to find a variety of weapons and skill sets, and he's got a skill set, you know, that we wanted to maintain and keep with this offense.
Bills GM Brandon Bean on the James Cook extension, joining us on the Worcester Hotline. Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Sports. Some fantasy football chatter. Cook's signing, of course, in the fantasy football community would be sought as good news, I think. There's a lot of aggression conversation on his touchdowns. We'll get to the Bills fantasy forecast as we welcome in our friend, Scott Pianowski, who joins us all the time. Years and years now. Scott, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How are you?
We're good. You know, we're the Buffalo life. gear up for another season. Get excited about a really great team, an exciting team, and we'll worry about, January in January, even though we sometimes worry about it in September. So it's Bill's life.
For sure, and it's been such a fun fantasy team. Obviously, Josh Allen coming off an MVP year. You mentioned Cook had the 18 touchdowns. He's a tough guy to figure because he only had 6 the previous season. We know Josh Allen is always going to have a lot of goal line equity. They like their other backs behind Cook, even though they did extend him. And then the receiver room, you know, there are a lot of good players on this offense. I don't know that any of the receivers are ever going to be great. You would hope that maybe Dalton Kincaid in the third season, the third season for him, Keon Coleman, his second season. Obviously, he started as a basketball player in college. Maybe it takes time to develop there. It's just interesting. Do you think, who are the great quarterbacks in the NFL, right? You know, I mean, Lamar Jackson has so many things to play with. And, you know, they've added some pieces in Kansas City and, you know, Jalen Hurts has A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. I'd like to see, since Diggs left, and I like Khalil Shakir, I do, but I would just love to see Josh Allen playing with one of those alpha top 10 receivers, and obviously that guy isn't on the roster right now.
Sensitive subject sometimes around here, Scott. That's okay, though. You know, Allen, I was looking at I wonder what you think about his age and his timeline here, and I looked at an all-time great quarterback. And for me, it was a look at, let's hope he ages like Steve Young. Young, I mean, it took Steve Young a long time to get to his peak. But from age 31 to 36, like, Steve Young was super athletic and super good. And, you know, here in Buffalo, Allen's not yet 30, but we're wondering how many prime years there will be and how many years he'll be jumping over guys. And I wonder if you have a thought on that. Like, from a fantasy standpoint and just a football playing standpoint, are primes for quarterbacks, can the athletic ones, can the guys like Josh extend those farther than you might think?
It's a great question. And we did a piece earlier this week about whether Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen should be the number one fantasy quarterback. And I did line up with Jackson because I just thought he had more help. But if you're going to line up behind Allen, you have to point to the rushing touchdowns. He had 12 last season, 15 the previous season. And in the first 5 seasons, he was active in that area, but it was never double digit. It was, you know, 8, 9, and 7 and stuff like that. So it's always that question of, well, he's your franchise player. He's your most important player. How much do you want him running? How many hits do you want him to take? I mean, I realize there are some kneel downs in there, but I mean, he gets over 100 carries every year. He's obviously the most athletic guy on the field, and he feels like he can do anything. He's been remarkably durable. Let's hope that continues. But, you know, sometimes I would say, you know, Josh, we're up 17 in the fourth quarter. You don't have to take on an extra hit. You don't have to lower that shoulder. You love the competitiveness. And I realize when these guys get on the field, you know, sometimes that extra gear kicks in. They're not thinking about 3 months down the road or 3 years down the road. They're thinking about getting that first down. They're thinking about winning that play. You wonder, though, at what point do they say, you know what, we need you in January and February. We need you healthy then. So let's just you know, dial it back a little bit. And you see this a lot of times. This is a discussion a lot of times in the playoffs that people like to bet the rushing props on the quarterbacks, but sometimes the idea is that, well, maybe you wouldn't make that run in September, but now it's January. There's no tomorrow. If you lose, you might as well just let it all go and maybe play a little bit more recklessly. It's a double-edged sword because you don't want to take out his instincts. You don't want to take out what makes Josh Allen great, but you want him to play well into his 30s, you know, maybe even up to age 40, stuff like that. We've seen quarterbacks can do that in recent seasons, and I just wonder if being a little bit more discretionary with that running might be a good idea.
Scott Pianowski on the Wester Hotline. All right, Scott, so the fantasy football world, like we're well into drafting season. I've got a vampire league on Sunday. I've got some dynasty leagues that have drafted, some redraft leagues that are coming up. I feel like every year we're talking about a beginning of season story about drafts. And do you have anything like that it is this year? If you're looking at your redraft leagues, what is the look? Running backs at the top, a really deep group of elite receivers. You can get two good receivers even all the way into the second round. Like, what is your overarching look at the world of fantasy football drafts as it sits right now in mid-August?
Yeah, to me, the big question is that last year was defined by, I know Christian McCaffrey, managers don't want to hear this, but last year was defined by the running backs were remarkably durable overall. And there's a lot of things going on there. Not as many bell cows. The defenses have gotten lighter as they're looking to defend the pass. And they're almost begging the offense to say, okay, well, we're going to give you these running yards if you want it. And the offense said, fine, you know, let's get a couple of backs going. Let's get some power backs going. And last year, all those backs who changed teams, right? Barkley to better situations. Barkley goes to Philadelphia, he smashes. Henry goes to Baltimore, 5.9 yards a carry and a bushel of touchdowns. Josh Jacobs goes to Green Bay, and he was terrific. So the idea is, are you okay with Derrick Henry in his 30s? Are you okay with Saquon Barkley after 482 touches? Are you okay with McCaffrey after a season where he went from 21 touchdowns to zero and only played four games last year? He's one of the toughest calls. So there's been a little bit of, I think, of a correction, maybe an overcorrection, because the running backs were so good last year and having an impact. It's gone a little bit back to what fantasy used to be, where you just went to your draft and you're just looking for a couple of running backs early. We'll worry about the other positions. And as you mentioned, wide receiver, I don't think it's deep for the entire draft, but when you're looking 25, 30, 35 guys deep, and I look at what's available maybe at wide receiver 15 and what's available, say, wide receiver 32, that looks pretty flat to me. I don't think you're doing that much worse if you get the 27th receiver than if you get the 18th receiver. A lot of similarities there. So I think zero RB is not the strategy where you don't take any running backs early. I don't think many people are doing that now. I think most people have accepted that you either need that hero RB, you need one of them you can hang your hat on, or maybe you need two of them. I've seen a lot more people go with a robust running back room thinking, okay, maybe it's almost like a hero wide receiver where you get that one really good one. And then you think, okay, I'll just circle back and I'll get Devonta Smith. I'll circle back and get Jalen Waddle. I'll circle back and get George Pickens, guys like that. And then the names you like could be different. But I agree that second and third tier receiver looks really deep, and maybe we don't have to attack receiver as proactively as we might have in previous seasons.
Scott, there was a time where you could make a case for Gronk number one, right, because he was so far and away at tight end. How do you feel about tight end for that? Is there a hero tight end build where there are how many you would consider for this? Like three, four? Because everybody else is just kind of in the mix. Like, what's the number on tight end?
It's probably three to me. And it's funny, there's only one guy, one vanity tight end, I would say, that I'm kind of circling, and that's George Kittle. Now, I'm worried with Bowers that team wants to run the ball like crazy. Terrific as he is, and Geno Smith is an upgrade over what they had last year, but I'm okay with Bowers. Trey McBride, I have a problem with. He hasn't scored touchdowns, and I just think that's a Kyler Murray problem. With he's undersized, he doesn't see the red area very well. They tried really hard, and finally McBride got in the end zone, I think, in December last year, but he had a very long streak of tons of volume and no touchdowns. I think that's because of his quarterback. Kittle has always been an efficiency darling, generally doesn't even get to 100 targets, but Debo's gone. We'll see what Jennings winds up being. He kind of came out of nowhere. Ayuk won't be ready opening day. Pearsall, second-year player. His rookie year was kind of a mess because of what happened before the season. So I think this might be your Kittle needs 110 or 115 targets, and he's proven he can do it even with less than 100. If I'm going with a vanity tight end build, it's probably him. If I don't go in that direction, I really like Tucker Kraft. He's maybe tight end 7, 8, 9, 10, something like that. And he's actually had a similar to Kittle in that really good efficiency. You know, nobody has had over 100, I think 100 is the max target count since Davante Adams left town. We knew Green Bay likes to shuttle their guys in and out, but I think Kraft has made the case for more volume, and they designed touchdowns for him. They designed splash plays for him. He had excellent yards after the catch last year, I think 14.1 yards per reception. So if I don't go early on tight end, Kraft's a target. I also think Jake Ferguson, I don't know if Dallas will run the ball. I think their defense will probably fall apart. Dax there, two really good receivers, but nothing after those guys. I think Ferguson might be ready for maybe 750 or 800 yards and like 6 or 7 touchdowns, which a tight end would probably land you in the top 6 or 7.
Scott Pianowski, Yahoo Sports on the Western Hotline. Scott, I want to ask you about two teams that had great offenses and lost their coordinators. And if you think there's any blip on the way for Tampa or Detroit, because they both have great passing games, dynamic runners, a lot of good receiving weapons, and Ben Johnson left and Liam Cohen left. Do you feel like they'll be just fine? They'll pick up where they left off?
That's a great question. It really involves four teams because, you know, it also opens up a conversation of what we expect from Jacksonville, what we expect from Chicago. I'm least of all worried about the Lions because when you have a veteran quarterback, he's almost like de facto offensive coordinator too. What Jared Goff going to forget what he likes to do with Amon-Ra St. Brown, the routes they like to run, the looks they like to get. Phil Port is into his third season. Jameson Williams had a breakout year, but maybe there's even more room for growth. Gibbs spread his wings last year when Montgomery got hurt. I realize Ragnow has retired, but I think Detroit, well, the thing with Detroit is that they were the top offense last year in points. They scored 100 more points than they did the previous season. They'll probably regress back to what they were in 2023, a top five offense. Maybe they lose 70, 80, 100 points just because they were so efficient last year. So they may say, oh, wow, they really miss Ben Johnson. It's just hard to be that great year over year, but I think they'll be a top five offense pretty easily and not worried about drafting their guys. More worried about the Tampa Bay situation. You know, Baker Mayfield, when you get into a fun story, and I'm happy for him. I mean, the guy got run out of town so Cleveland could dance with Deshaun Watson. Obviously, that didn't work out, but happy to see Mayfield get back in the NFL and get a starting job and last year have a career season. But when a career year happens that late in somebody's trajectory, it just makes us nervous. Cohen was a big part of that. Sounds like Godwin won't be ready opening day. I don't know how sticky Baker Mayfield's running from last year will be. So I think the regression monster hits him hard because quarterback is so deep and he's in that kind of that quarterback 6 to quarterback 10 bucket. I just rather shop rounds later where you can get in. The names are different for everybody. Yep. Maybe you like Drake May. Maybe you like J.J. McCarthy. Maybe you like Penix in Atlanta. There's so many different guys. I mentioned Prescott, who I think is a good value. So you can do really well on that tier. Find the guys that you like. Maybe draft a couple of those guys. I'm not going to draft Mayfield.
One more guy I want for you on the young. Any interest in Cam Ward and Calvin Ridley? I feel like I'm reading a lot about how they, if nothing else, they have a connection. Treylon Burks, of course, hurt, and he won't play for the Titans. He's done. So Tennessee doesn't have much. But could they lean into that enough, and could game script be enough where you feel like those two might be worth looking into?
Well, definitely Ridley. And I talked about how that, you know, anywhere from 15, 17, 18 wide receiver into the 30s is pretty flat. Calvin Ridley's the target for me, the boring veteran, right? He's been around. He's kind of a sneaky old player now, but he was productive last year with a terrible quarterback room. All we're asking Cam Ward to be is better than what they had last year. I don't think that's a big step for him to hurdle. Tony Pollard also, with Ty J. Spears hurt now, I think he'll get more work than maybe people realize. I think the Titans are going to be, maybe they're like this year's Panthers, right, where they end up, and I don't know if it will start slow like Carolina did last year. By the end of the last year, felt pretty good about Hubbard. Bryce Young played pretty well. Thielen gave us a useful season. Maybe that's the model. Maybe Pollard is this year's Hubbard. Maybe Thielen, and I know he's a totally different type of player than Ridley, but maybe those guys comp. And maybe Cam Ward can kind of have the season Bryce Young had. And next year we're talking about Cam Young as a sleeper. I don't think Tennessee is going to be a dumpster fire by any means. And the two guys I'm circling there are Pollard and Ridley.
Finally, Scott, big news for Yahoo, adding guillotine formats. You know, is this guillotine's moment finally breaking through?
Excited. It's a really fun format. And I really like it because I love – you know, so much Jeremy of fantasy's upside. Yeah. The great thing about guillotine is it's floor. Right? Beat one team. It's be good right away. Don't draft guys you have to wait for. And and then you have the hardest waiver wire choices every week. Because, you know, do you, and I'm still not really sure what the right ratio is between, oh my God, you know, these superstars are available, I got to get them now, I get them for the full season, or I got to be patient because there's every week the waiver wire is like grass, it's going to grow back.
Yep,
so
yep.
It's a fun format. I can't say I've perfected it yet. I've run deep in both of my guillotine leagues that I've run the last couple of years, but I haven't won one yet. So it's a blast. It's on Yahoo now. So, you know, it's like anything else. You want to have variety in your diet. You want to have variety in your portfolio. I think you should have variety in your fantasy life, and hopefully a Yahoo guillotine-style league will be part of your portfolio this year. It's really a lot of fun.
For sure. Scott Pianowski, Yahoo Sports. Thanks, Scott.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to Scott again, of course, during the regular season. We always do make sure we touch base with him. The guillotine format. I've got some advice on guillotine, having played it now for, I don't know, probably like 6-7 years. I've had maybe 12 different guillotine runs, have a win or two, multiple finals. The number one advice I have is after the draft, don't be afraid to spend your money. Spend that money. Survive. Spend that waiver budget. Do not save. Somebody great comes open, get them. End of story. Don't worry about it. If you know, it's competitive bidding, though. 803-0550. Nick Mendola going to join us at 9 o'clock. You know, catch up with him. A couple Bills matters. And an EPL season preview because the Premier League season starts today. Liverpool opens their title defense. And then a full weekend of games. It's a beautiful time of year. Joe and I were talking about it yesterday. If you like the Premier League, if you like soccer and football, like, today, it's on. Game on today, a bunch on tomorrow, a bunch on Sunday. Next week, it's college football, and there's so much stuff on your television, you don't even know what to do with yourself, even as we're still here in the preseason for the NFL. So Nick comes up at 9 o'clock to join us here on WGR. So just a minute ago at ESPN, I saw Mike Clay, NFL writer, posted his lists of every NFL position group and their rankings, right? Like the quarterbacks, the receivers, the running backs. Mike Clay, ESPN.com. And would you guys care to guess where the Bills, which position group is the best?
I'm going to say quarterback.
Yes, that's right, okay. Quarterback. Number two. Quarterback is ranked number two. And then which is the worst? Guesses are required here.
I'm going to go.
We are still on the radio, even though we're streaming.
I'm thinking.
Worst position group, according to Mike Clay, for the Bills.
Let's go with safety.
That's right.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, that's right. 30th.
Yeah, overthought it.
Yeah, 30th at safety. The roster, he's a little lower on the Bills' offensive line than most might be. Like, looking at the Bills' rankings, quarterback is two, behind only Baltimore. For Mike Clay. And the next highest position group rating is corner, which he puts at 7th. And almost everything else is just kind of middle of the road, like 13th to 15th, except for safety and wide receiver. Safety is 30th, and wide receiver he puts at 22nd. So and then there's overall outlook. Hold on, let me find his overall outlook. It's ranking season, you know how this goes. Overall outlook, the Bills rank 3rd. Baltimore, Philadelphia, Buffalo, Kansas City is 4th. He also ranked Patrick Mahomes 3rd at quarterback. More are starting to do it. Pray for us if he wins another one, though. Anyway. 803-0550. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's out today. Joining me next segment, Nick Mendola. Old friend who hasn't been in this room for how many years? Maybe like 3 years. Yeah, it's not that long. He used to be in this room a lot more often. Anyway, we're going to do an EPL season preview. The latest maybe on some soccer news, all that good stuff. Owen's going to pick his EPL team at 9:30. So, we'll have some fun. It's kind of a football Friday. Premier League season starts in a couple hours. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.